the Battle of Gettysburg was fought 150 years ago this week. On the rolling hills of southern Pennsylvania, 90,000 Union troops collided with 75,000 Confederate soldiers. After 3 days, there were nearly 50,000 casualties. It is still the largest battle ever fought in North America. In part three of our commemoration of Gettysburg with MSU historian Roger Rosentrater, current state Scott Pohl asks him about the battle's influence, the battle's influence on the outcome of the Civil War. Rosentrater points out that the epic clash was a major turning point in the war, partly because another significant Union victory occurred just 24 hours later.
At the same time that the Battle of Gettysburg has just happened, the day after, on the 4th of July, the Confederate stronghold on the Mississippi River at Vicksburg is captured by U.S. Grant. So these are two serious blows that the Confederacy take in the early days of July, particularly since only a couple months earlier, things had been going quite well. Matter of fact, Robert E. Lee had enjoyed his greatest battlefield victory 2 months earlier in Virginia at a place called Chancellorsville. So now this becomes a serious setback.
Can you set it up for us regarding what happened in May and June that led to ultimate battle?
Yeah, I can do that. Beginning as early as the spring of 1862 now, the Yankees had been trying a series of campaigns for their On to Richmond effort, which is to capture the Confederate capital. What had happened in those several campaigns is that, long story short, the Yankees lost. And Robert E. Lee, by the spring of 1863 now, has enjoyed a great series of victories, particularly at Fredericksburg and then at Chancellorsville. So it's campaign season, it's the summer, and he decides he's going to invade the North for the second time. Now, the first time he had invaded the North was in September of 1862. That resulted in the Battle of Antietam, which is the single bloodiest day of the Civil War, and it also allows Lincoln, despite the fact that it's kind of a Yankee victory, and certainly it allows Lincoln to issue the preliminary emancipation, which is effective the 1st of January, 1863. But Robert E. Lee feels by June of 1863 that there's yet another opportunity. Invading the North might result in a series of goals, one of which would be to, and this sometimes gets overlooked, to take advantage of plundering, basically. Thousands of cattle and other forms of livestock were sent south as a result of this effort. The fighting had taken place in Virginia for well over a year. He wanted to take the fighting out of Virginia, as it were, which is exactly what he did. At the same time, there's still some hope of diplomatic considerations. Realistically, the British aren't going to intervene, but there's a hope that just maybe a battlefield victory might result in that. There was some evidences of war weariness in the North, and Lee has great contempt for Union generals. And for good reason. He's beaten them all. So at the time that this campaign starts, it culminates in the Battle of Gettysburg, Joe Hooker is the Army commander, Northern Army commander. He's the guy that had lost the Battle of Chancellorsville so dramatically. As a result, Lee says, all right, one more time. I'll try this again. That's what sets up this effort to invade, or sets up the invasion of Pennsylvania.
Geographically, was it coincidental then that this happened at Gettysburg, or was there some other significance to this region that pointed both forces to Gettysburg?
That's actually a very good question. It's coincidental that this battle takes place at Gettysburg. Matter of fact, it's subordinates that kind of bring on the fight. Lee does not want to fight at Gettysburg, never intended to fight at Gettysburg. The new army commander for the Army of the Potomac, which is a northern army, is George Meade. Hooker had gotten angry with Lincoln, had offered his resignation, thinking it wouldn't be accepted, and it was. So literally a week before the Battle of Gettysburg, there's yet another new commander of the northern army, and that's going to be George Meade, who coincidentally is a Pennsylvanian, so there's an advantage there, hopefully, for the northern army. But again, neither officer expected to fight there, neither general expected to fight at Gettysburg. The reason Gettysburg, beyond the fact that subordinates kind of bring the fight on, is there are up to a dozen roads that lead into Gettysburg, which allows you to move troops fairly rapidly. Some of these roads are even paved, which means that even if it were to be wet and muddy, you don't have that issue. So you can move troops quickly to this location.
Tell me now about the role of Michigan in Gettysburg. How big was the presence of fighters from Michigan?
Well, in the Northern Army of about 90,000 men, there are 4,000 Michiganians. and they serve in all branches of the service. There are infantrymen there, there are artillerymen there, there are cavalrymen there, and there, again, there's some sharpshooters as well. And on each of the 3 days, there will be a Michigan unit that will perform in some form or fashion. I guess I'm hesitant to use the word heroically, that's overused, but maybe the better way to put that, Scott, is to say that on each of the days of the battle, there will be a Michigan unit that will perform significantly in some portion of the fight.
So of these 3 days, are there any particular stories about Michigan's involvement?
One of the better told stories of the early part of the battle is the 24th Michigan. Now, this is largely a Wayne County regiment. It is part of the Iron Brigade, which has already demonstrated its ability on previous battlefields. They will arrive just in the nick of time when the Confederates are pushing into Gettysburg early on the morning of July 1. During the course of several hours of fighting, the Iron Brigade, along with the 24th Michigan, will slow down the Confederates. They will ultimately be pushed out of the town, as it were, and suffer 80% casualties at the end of that day. So they go into the fight with about 500 men, which is pretty considerable. By the time the day is all over, there are actually about 26 survivors that are left. Ultimately, a few other stragglers will join on. 80% casualties, which is pretty dramatic. There are few, if any, regiments that would suffer those type of numbers in any battle, actually.
Roger, you've brought to my attention the role of a Michigan woman in the battle at Gettysburg.
One of the more remarkable Michiganians at the Battle of Gettysburg is a woman by the name of Annie Etheridge. Now, there aren't a lot of women serving in the ranks in the Army. Obviously, that wasn't allowed in the 1860s. But Annie Etheridge was in her early 20s. She stood 5'3", and she actually went off to war in the summer of 1861, and she becomes the equivalent of a modern combat medic. Matter of fact, one contemporary observed that she had a vigorous constitution and was decidedly good-looking. And I could spend a lot of time giving you a lot of details, but what she would find herself doing, again, not serving, you know, with a musket or in the ranks, and she didn't have an enlistment papers or anything like that, but she was there helping the wounded. There are plenty of stories of where she played an important role in assisting not only the wounded, but sometimes even inspiring men to stand up and fight, as it were. Matter of fact, let me give you one last story about her, because not only was she at Gettysburg, a year later, in the spring of 1864, Grant now is in the East. He's really commanding the Union armies. And he decided that people like Annie Etheridge needed to be removed from the front lines. Well, he's in charge, and he could order that being done. What was unique about this situation is that Annie's role among her regiment, 5th Michigan, as it were, was that it led to a petition being circulated. Now, it just wasn't privates and sergeants who signed it, junior officers signed it, and brigade, division, and corps commanders signed it too, saying, Annie needs to stay with us. She shouldn't go back to the rear lines. Apparently had an impact. Annie Etheridge served the entire 4 years of the Civil War, only leaving service in the summer of 1865. She is buried in Arlington Cemetery today.
MSU historian Roger Rosentrater, thank you for helping us remember the role of Michigan at Gettysburg.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
For Current State, this is Scott Pohl.